You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Thank you.
Our next case for argument this morning is Meridian Security against Sadowski.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Chemers.
Please the Court, Counsel. Robert Chemers for the Plaintiff Appellant, Meridian Security Insurance Company. It is important to note that this is an appeal from the Northern District of Illinois from the dismissal of an insurance company's declaratory judgment action, which sought an adjudication as to a duty to defend.
The jurisdictional rules would be the same even if it were an appeal from the Southern District of Illinois.
Except for the fact that only the Northern District of Illinois has decided that in an insurance company's declaratory judgment action, the amount in controversy is determined only by the potential defense costs. They don't look to the value of the object of the underlying litigation.
By the way, what has happened in the underlying litigation?
It's settled.
It's settled. For how much?
I think $7,500. But at the time we filed the declaratory judgment action, of course, was not settled.
What were the attorney's fees?
The underlying case? Mm-hmm. According to the defendant, there were $14,000. I point out that the defendant filed a motion to dismiss this appeal, which this court, Your Honor, Judge Easterbrook, denied and indicated in his, Your Honor, indicated in your December 13, 2005 order that the filing of the motion to dismiss by the defendant waived the opportunity to file a full-blown brief of appellee, which the defendants filed anyway. So either I'm arguing
well,
against...
it actually said that the merits panel was going to consider
correct.
What to do with that brief.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. Consider what to do with the brief or what to do with...
Well, from an appellee's point of view, not filing a brief isn't the same thing as not having an appeal. I mean, one doesn't even have to file a brief. Sometimes people file statements to the effect that they're not going to.
Well, we've read the brief, and I'm sure Your Honors have read the brief, and the brief is interesting from the standpoint that it doesn't cite one case that supports the defendant's position that the district court was correct. It doesn't cite one case or give one reason why this court should overturn 50 years of jurisprudence with respect to declaratory judgment actions that you look to the value of the object of the underlying litigation. And unless it appears...
At the time of filing.
Correct. And unless it appears to a legal certainty...
And what was the plaintiff's demand in the underlying litigation at the time of filing?
The underlying litigation alleged that there were more than 50 members of a TCPA class action. The plaintiff represented more than 50 members who were seeking $500 statutory damages trebled. So there would be $1,500 times, it said more than 50, so that means no less than 51. 51 times 1,500 is $76,500. Simple arithmetic shows that had the district court not confused ripeness with subject matter jurisdiction, the amount in controversy was satisfied. This court has held that since 1967 at the earliest in the Sears case, 68 in Motorist Mutual, 97 in Shirk, Grinnell Mutual, case after case after case, that you look to the value of the underlying case. That in one panel of this court held, the amount sought or the value of the underlying case is the amount in controversy for an insurer's declaratory judgment action.
So in an action like this one where the underlying case is a putative class action, you should assume that the class is certified and that's what's at stake?
When you look to the red cab case from the U.S. Supreme Court, unless you can say to a legal certainty that the underlying class action will not be certified or the underlying plaintiffs will not recover, then subject matter jurisdiction has not been satisfied. But you can't say that. The legal certainty test means that to a legal certainty they can't prevail in that case. And since Meridian Security was not a party in a federal court by removal, but was the original plaintiff, it's given the benefit of the doubt that it has satisfied the amount in controversy. We submit to the court the amount in controversy was satisfied by looking to the simple arithmetic calculation from the underlying case. That's the value of that case. The district court said no. The district court, relying on his own decision that was going to be the appeal after this one but was dismissed yesterday, decided that you only look to the defense costs involved in the underlying case. Now, the reason I said it's from the Northern District is that's a concept unique to that court. It started with a decision in a case called Ohio Casualty versus Lower 40 Gardens. The case, by the way, I lost on behalf of Ohio Casualty. The judge who decided that case, Ohio Casualty versus Lower 40, 3 weeks ago, decided a case where she did not even mention the emergent line of decisions that she initiated in December of 2003 and held in an insurance company's declaratory judgment action, which was a class action, looked to the value of the underlying case.
Don't you think it depends on what the policy, I mean, you know, the declaratory judgment action would depend in part on what the policy is promising. Is it promising a defense? Is it promising indemnification?
Right.
Et cetera.
Promises both. This was we were seeking a declaration of no duty to defend and no duty to indemnify. Of course, if there is no duty to defend, then there can be no duty to indemnify. And it was based on a decision from a panel of this court in American States versus Associates of Jackson County, where the court held the question of coverage in a TCPA case under a general liability policy of insurance is not even close. It's not covered. That was the law of this circuit, and it still is the law of this circuit, which is why Meridian Security, with diversity of citizenship at its ready, decided to file suit in the Northern District of Illinois.
It was the law of this circuit predicting some state's law. Which state's law was that?
Illinois. What the Illinois Supreme Court would do if faced with that same question.
Has happened in Illinois since?
Well, what has happened in Illinois is the Second District Appellate Court sitting in Elgin decided the Valley Forge versus Swiderski Electric case, which held there was a duty to defend. And you know, to take that one step further, which the Illinois Supreme Court granted leave to appeal on. Now, a lot can happen.
And that's still under advisement?
It was leave to appeal was just granted several weeks ago.
Okay.
In fact, I believe it was granted the end of January. So it's less than several weeks ago. The bottom line is that case could settle.
So your answer is the Supreme Court of Illinois has not addressed that question.
That is correct. It granted the insurance company's petition for leave to appeal. We have a situation here where this concept of looking only to the potential defense costs, where you're seeking a declaration of no duty to defend, is unique to the Northern District. There is no other court in Illinois, no other federal district court in Illinois, or in this court circuit.
Well,
in
and perhaps, yeah, I mean, we have often made the point that, of course, district court opinions are not precedential. I think the other thing that is interesting to know is what does Illinois think about these things and what do the other courts of appeals or other states, you know, other authoritative sources say about this?
As far as the jurisdictional issue here?
The jurisdictional issue, you've indicated in your brief that quite a few circuits have said one has to look for jurisdictional amount purposes to both the duty to indemnify and
correct.
Defend.
Correct, every circuit court.
If they're both in the policy.
There is no contrary authority. There is no contrary authority from a circuit court of appeal that has looked at this question. Wright and Miller say it has been attempted and has always been rejected. The district court decisions, and it's interesting, the defendant relies in support of the judgment entered by the district court here on the other district court decisions, which aren't even precedential on the district judge who decided this case and certainly aren't precedent in this court. Every court that has looked at this question has decided that you look to the amount in controversy is determined by the value of the underlying case plus defense costs, not just defense costs. If that were the case, if it was defense costs only, if this were a situation involving some other aspect of the policy, there may be no basis for any amount in controversy, and the decision might be correct, but that's not the case here. This is a duty to defend case with language that is identical to the language in the American States case where this court held it's not even a close question as to whether there's coverage. Where, by the way, the court didn't comment about amount in controversy, ripeness, discretion, or anything concerning the jurisdiction. I would submit to the court that unless every decision rendered by this court involving an insurance company's declaratory judgment action for 50 or more years was decided without subject matter jurisdiction, and I dare say that's not the case, the district judge here was just plain wrong. You'd ask the court to reverse and to remand. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions before rebuttal?
No.
Mr. Smith.
Steve Smith on behalf of defendants appellees. Your Honors, Mr. Chemers suggested that this court should adopt the legal certainty test under the Red Cab case, St. Paul Mercury versus Red Cab. We'd submit that under the U.S. Supreme Court case of McNutt versus General Motors, 298 U.S. 178, a 1936 case, that when the defendant has contested jurisdiction under 1332 of the Judicial Code, as the defendants here did by filing a 12B1 motion, that it's incumbent upon Meridian Security to set forth competent proof, that is to say,
proof
by a preponderance
of what?
By a preponderance of the evidence.
Counsel, that listen to the question. Competent proof of what? The ripeness inquiry has nothing to do with my question.
Competent proof of the amount in controversy exceeding $75,000.
Of what? One proves a fact. What fact do you think had to be proved competently, that is, by admissible evidence?
The fact that defense costs would, in the district judge's opinion, exceed $75,000.
That's not the ripeness issue, right? The claim is that the underlying demand in the state litigation exceeded $75,000. Now, competent proof presumably would mean, do we have an authentic copy of the complaint in the state case? Was there any doubt that that had been authenticated and introduced?
No. But
so what fact was it that needed to be proved and wasn't?
Well, on
the
face,
stakes over $75,000.
The fact that on the face of the insurance company's declaratory judgment complaint, that it had, within the bounds of that well-pleaded complaint, sufficiently asserted that the amount in controversy exceeded $75,000 exclusive of interest and cost.
But their complaint certainly said we want a declaratory judgment that we don't owe the defendants anything.
With respect, Your Honor, I disagree.
And, well,
the reason is that when you look at count two of the complaint, paragraph 19 and 20, the insurance company here has specifically abjured any troubling of damages. In paragraph 19 of the complaint, I quote, "The recovery for each such unauthorized facsimile is set by statute at
$500." Does that mean there isn't an argument about it? Because
yes,
the state court complaint, so defendants get to define what plaintiffs can receive? That's an interesting theory, because in the state court, the plaintiffs asked for punitive for the trebling. Now the defendants come in and say, we don't want to do that. And you're saying that that's conclusive?
Well,
it means that the trebling won't happen because the defendants don't want it?
Well, with respect to the insurance company is the master of its own complaint.
No, no way.
Under the well-pleaded complaint rule.
Suppose
if it only
the state court had entered a judgment that trebled. Suppose the state court had certified the class action and had entered both statutory damages and had trebled. Mm-hmm. Does the insurance company get to come in and say, well, but we've decided not to pay that?
If there had been a judgment entered, the insurance company at that point could seek to file declaratory judgment.
No. You're not answering my question.
Did I misunderstand?
What I'm trying to get at, and I think Judge Easterbrook is too, is what was in contention. Mm-hmm. Here we'd have, you know, there's a request for the statutory damages and the trebling. The insurance company is taking the position, we don't think we have to pay that. That's the dispute. That's what's on the table, if you will. Mm-hmm. Who wins, who loses, all down the line. But amount in controversy is what's in controversy, what's on the table.
Well, the policyholder, my client, sought a defense of this claim. It did not, at that juncture, seek indemnity for the claim because no judgment had been entered.
No.
It's not quantifiable and crystallized.
Well.
So that's what that's what's at issue on count one, defense. And when you look to defense...
No, I mean, the truth is, what was at issue in the declaratory judgment action was whether either a duty to defend or a duty to indemnify existed. And that was what was in contention at that point. Certainly neither of the cases you've cited in your brief, you have a couple of cases cited on page 15, neither of those two cases holds to the contrary. Argento against Village of Melrose Park is talking about ripeness. It says an insurer ordinarily cannot obtain a declaratory judgment as to its liability prior to the insured first being found liable, but the case actually goes on to say that the declaratory judgment action is fine if there's also a controversy over duty to defend. The other case is a Structural Work Act case where there was no contractual duty to defend. So neither of those cases is about amount and controversy or is about anything really but ripeness. Different issue.
I would suggest we look at first the duty to defend issue. The insurance company pleaded in paragraph 10 of its complaint, its DJ complaint, that it declined to defend my client. It had not expended any defense costs in the case. It made no showing or attempt to show to the district judge that defense costs should account for any part of the $75,000. And the Illinois Supreme Court has ruled in the General Insurance Agents versus Midwest Sporting Goods case, 828 Northeast 2nd, 1092, that absent any express policy provision allowing the insurance company to recoup its defense costs, such costs cannot be recouped. So the defense costs are not an issue here from the view of appellees, only the indemnity. We'd submit that a potential indemnity should not be taken into account. Now, if the court wishes to adopt the legal certainty test, we think the competent proof test of McNutt versus General Motors and this circuit's decision in Rexford Rand versus should be adopted.
Come back to my question. What fact do you think had to be proved? Facts exist now.
All right, because when looking at the underlying putative class action, which alleged an Illinois class, the fact that had to be proved, appellees would submit, is that the class representative's claim had to exceed $75,000 exclusive of interest and costs.
Now, you're totally confusing something here that allocates jurisdiction between the state and federal courts, and you're describing a rule that sometimes applies in federal court now with what goes on in state court. The state courts are perfectly free to entertain class actions where the class representative's claim is a dollar if they want to do that. Maybe the federal courts can't do that, but this was a state court class action that the insurance policy allegedly covered.
Well, I know of no Illinois state court case which allows aggregation of class members' claims in order to exceed any jurisdictional minimum.
There is no jurisdictional minimum, number one. Number two, this case is one between the insurance company and the insured, so whether things are aggregated or not is utterly beside the point.
Well, in the Page County Circuit Court, I'd respectfully suggest there is a jurisdictional minimum of $50,001 in order
really
to
matter.
Assert a class action. And
really doesn't matter from the point of view of what's in controversy here between the insurance company and the insured company.
Well, I'd submit respectfully, the United States Supreme Court in ExxonMobil versus Alapata Services, 125 Supreme Court 2611, last year reaffirmed the so-called non-aggregation
rule.
That's
for federal court. That's a completely federal court issue.
And why shouldn't the federal district judge be bound by it?
Because he's not talking about a federal court class action. He's talking about a class action in state court.
There's only an individual action in federal court.
Well, I'd refer...
Just one plaintiff, not on behalf of anybody other than itself.
I'd refer the panel to two recent decisions by panels of this circuit. Last week in the Knutson 2 case, Knutson versus Liberty Mutual, the panel waited until the class had been certified on September 29, 2005, before deciding that there was subject matter jurisdiction under Section 1332 of the Judicial Code. I'd remind the court that in this case,
the
plaintiff hadn't even moved for class certification.
The case to which you are referring had nothing to do with ascertaining subject matter jurisdiction. It had to do with ascertaining the date on which the case had been commenced for purposes of the Class Action Fairness Act.
But it did look at the $5 million threshold. I think the court would agree, the $5 million threshold under CAFA. And we'd submit that in this case, one is looking to see whether $75,000 has been exceeded. There's been no class certification. The plaintiff here didn't even move for class certification. It was a small claims case.
With our decision in Brill against
Countrywide
Home Loans.
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
We said that for purposes of determining the amount in controversy in a case of this kind, you take the number of plaintiffs and multiply it by $1,500. Now, and that's the amount in controversy, and that's distinct from how much money the plaintiffs are actually going to get. Now, if you use the Brill procedure on the underlying litigation, what is the amount in controversy?
I believe it's $500 times 51 because the insurance company in paragraph 19 of the complaint is asking for the court to declare that the indemnity, as defined by $500 per such facsimile, is the relief that the insurance company requests. There's no mention in the complaint, in the DJ complaint, of $1,500. And I'd also suggest that Brill was decided, as I recall, under CAFA. This declaratory judgment action and the underlying class action was filed well before February 18, 2005, the effective date of CAFA. We'd ask that the judgment below be affirmed.
Anything further, Mr. Chambers?
Judge Easterbrook and Judge Wood, thank you for the rebuttal. What I would ask this court to do when it reverses Judge Zagel's judgment is make it eminently clear that creative attempts to dance around the amount in controversy determination are not going to be appreciated by this court.
I don't think there's anything we can make clear that the Supreme Court of the United States didn't say in St. Paul Mercury.
Absolutely. That should have ended
60 years ago.
No doubt about it. But there must be 7 or 8 or 10 decisions from judges in the Northern District that basically ignore that and say you look to defense costs only. And I would submit to the court that you should overrule this ruling and those rulings and make it clear that the body of law in this circuit is you look to the value of the underlying case for the amount of controversy.
So you want us to come out and boldly declare that we agree with the Supreme Court of the United States?
No doubt. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.